Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Charlie Cook of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. Charlie joins us from Colorado. He was out there to cover in large part the efforts to recall two Democratic state senators who had supported very strict gun control legislation in the Centennial State. As we reported yesterday, both were recalled. And, of course, the Democrats are claiming voter suppression. The Republican or conservative spin on this is that people really like their Second Amendment rights. So, Charlie, you were on the ground there talking with voters, talking with activists. You reported how supporters of gun control had the huge money advantage here, yet in the end, those in favor of the Second Amendment won pretty handily.
It's odd how this has been either ignored by the mainstream press or turned into a supposed victory for the NRA. It's not a victory, really, for the NRA in two senses. Firstly, the involvement of the big money on the pro-recall side was in parallel. In other words, it did exist. They did come in. Americans for Prosperity and the National Rifle Association did come in. But they spent money alongside the grassroots groups that really made this happen. And the money in this, on both sides, seems to have made very little difference. The other reason it's not a huge victory for the NRA is because the NRA was outspent 6-1 by Mayor Bloomberg and so forth. Now, it's been my view for a while that Americans on both sides get a little too worked up about the money that is spent in the United States. Money has never been proven to have changed much. And when you look at what happened here in Colorado, you see a plumber down in Pueblo and his brother and a friend who's an electrician taking on a billionaire in Michael Bloomberg and the entire Democratic establishment in Colorado and in much of the country. I mean, Obama administration ground game officials came in. There were 350 of them running around on election day trying to get the vote out. And they were beaten by a guy, 29-year-old apolitical plumber called Victor Hett. In Colorado Springs, you saw six guys from the AR-15 chat room led by a man called Tim Knight, who had just had enough of John Morse, the state Senate president, and the new gun laws. They got together, decided to do something, and they beat the Democratic machine in Colorado Springs, which is a much bigger city than Pueblo. It really is an inspiring tale, not just of people standing up for their Second Amendment rights, but of citizen activism in a republic. And as I wrote at the end of my piece, the insurgents, if you will, were described as amateur hour and peons right from the beginning. Well, in a free country, it's the peons and the amateurs that should prevail.
One of the latest developments here is, of course, that one of the strongest anti-gun personalities out there is CNN's Piers Morgan, and he's been on this gun control crusade, especially since Newtown, but even before that, I believe, and he was, of course, stressed by the fact that Congress didn't end up doing much. So he loves the fact that states like Colorado, New York, Connecticut, some of these other states have gone forward with their gun control legislation. Maryland's another one. You have challenged Piers Morgan, Brit to Brit, for a debate on this. Why did you decide to throw down the gauntlet?
Well, I'm tired of it because it's really just posturing. Now, this isn't to say that there aren't people out there who know what they're talking about and oppose gun rights. I think they're wrong, both empirically and morally. But Piers Morgan is somebody who demonstrates that the unholy combination of being an obsessive extremist and knowing absolutely nothing about the subject. And I think it's about time that he were put in front of somebody who does know what they're talking about and who can take him to task on this. I've just got a bit sick and tired of him banging on and on. I mean, his show, it's almost monomaniacal. His show is supposed to be an evening variety news show, if you will. He replaced Larry King. Yet this is the number one topic that he discusses. It's bizarre.
Get ready for his supposed trap questions. That's what he always loves to do is, don't you care about the people who died in the theater or kids in the classroom? He's probably going to try to get you off subject, but you're a smart guy. You'll be ready.
Well, he won't
say
he won't accept the challenge, Greg. So we'll never get there. But yes, if he does accept the challenge, then that's exactly what he'll do. But you know that again is part of his problem because you have to frame debates in which you have nothing to say in that way. You have to say, well, why do you hate the children, or why don't you care about the people who were killed in the theater? That doesn't really work in a long term in a 10-minute segment.
All right, on to martini number two now, and there are a few things that there is bipartisan consensus on, but appears that it is the case today in response to this opinion piece allegedly written by Vladimir Putin, certainly one his staff approved of, that ran in the opinion pages of the New York Times. It's kind of this sanctimonious explanation of why his position on Syria is morally right, which is interesting for the guy who's basically arming a dictator who's mowing down his own people. And some of those own people are radicals, and we pretty much don't want any part of either side in this fight. His appealing to America to stop intervening in all these foreign wars. At the end of this piece, saying that America saying that we're exceptional in some way is morally wrong. Obama finally said it the other night. He said it for the wrong reasons, but America is exceptional and Putin doesn't like it. I don't know, Charlie, if he's overplaying his hand here or what he's trying to do, further humiliate us perhaps, but for the people who are cheering Putin for supposedly winning this battle, that's not a good thing for the United States, and we've seen that in many different ways before, and it's certainly not good now.
Well, first off, I don't believe for a second that the president thinks the United States is exceptional in the way that you and I do. He's made it very clear in previous years and previous statements that he doesn't believe that. It was cynical beyond belief that he would say that in that speech. In fact, the entire speech was cynical. In terms of Putin, who seems to agree with the president about American exceptionalism, no one, regardless of what they think of this president, should be pleased at what just happened. That was a very bad day, and it made me pretty angry to have the tyrant dictator of Russia lecturing the United States in its paper of record on September 11th shows you the predicament into which this president has got us. He is an amateur. He has absolutely no idea what he's doing. Regardless of one's view on Syria, mine was that I was open to being convinced, but I didn't see much of a case being made. This has been a ramshackle process from start to finish. This is not a partisan thing to say. In fact, yesterday, the left-wing papers were full of criticism of the president. Dana Milbank even said he had no idea what he was doing. And this is what happens when you don't know what you're doing. When you are in charge of the world, which, whether we like it or not, the United States is, it inherited naval supremacy and hegemony from the British. You have a responsibility to be competent because other people want to step into the breach. Now, I think too many people in the world just presume that the world is inherently like this, that there's always going to be a Pax Britannica or a Pax Americana. There's not. Vladimir Putin is a very smart, very canny man who recognizes weakness when he sees it. And that op-ed was a thumb in the eye to the United States that all Americans, regardless of their politics, should be embarrassed by.
And we'll see what happens with these talks in Geneva. Do you get this feeling that this is all a big charade and even John Kerry will recognize that, or will he go along with the charade because ultimately Obama would really love to avoid a military strike if he can?
I think they may go along with it. Obama doesn't want to get into this situation. I mean, I'm not taking the Ezra Klein line, which I thought was quite incredible, where he said the Obama administration must be so surprised at how well its strategy is working out. Come on, it's not their play. Iowa Hawk David Burge on Twitter is always joking about this, that, you know, Obama is playing super magic 3D chess in the eyes of his still insane supporters. No, I think they may well go along with it.
Fascinating. Well, obviously yesterday was 9/11, and there were supposed to be two major gatherings in Washington yesterday. The one that was put together kind of at the last minute, or at least much later than the first, was this patriotic biker rally. It was called the 2 Million Biker Rally. Ultimately, they probably got at least tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands. Some even said close to a million. Who knows? The other was the Million Muslim March on the Mall. And I love the way it was put on Twitter. They fell 999,900 short. And even that's being a little bit generous because they say there's about 20 to 25 people at this rally. It turned out to kind of be this 9/11 truther deal featuring Cornel West and some other radicals. So what do you make of this debacle?
Well, the first thing to say is that I don't like this million whatever march thing that people do because it never gets close to a million. there was a million mum march that was nowhere near it. I mean, since I've been in America in the last 2 years, it seems there's always a million whatever march. It's just deeply embarrassing. And it's a way of corrupting language. It's a way of getting the press to write the words million when you actually have no support whatsoever. And annoyingly, it works. As you say, though, they came nowhere near it. But really, I object to the two premises that most of the people that appeared to be selling. One is that 9/11 was an inside job, which it wasn't. That is an unfounded and disgraceful conspiracy theory that is usually inextricable from anti-Semitism, usually. And the other, Cornel West, incidentally, should be ashamed of himself for indulging it. And the other one is that Muslims in the United States, states are treated badly, which they're not. In fact, the way in which the United States treated Muslims after 9/11 was almost unprecedented in its kindness. Three people were killed. Now, that was disgraceful. If you remember, just after 9/11, there were three people, I think, within the first week who were shot. One of them was a Sikh who owned a gas station who was mistaken for a Muslim because he had a turban on. Now, there is absolutely no justification for that whatsoever, and it should be condemned. But that was basically it. Really, if you look at the history of the world, we should be saying, goodness me, what an amazing, inclusive and tolerant and liberal in the classical sense country we live in. People who go to Washington to try and stir up this sort of division irritate me. America is less racist and less intolerant than almost the entire world. So, again, what Cornel West was doing there indulging this is beyond me.
Charlie, have a safe trip back. Thanks, as always, for pinch hitting.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Charlie Cook of National Review, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim and me on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.